Of what might happen to you as a result of making these revelations?
Oh, yes. I probably am a dead man already.
They think they're living in a police state.
Once upon a time, there were these people in Europe called pilgrims, and they were afraid of being persecuted. So they all got in a boat and sailed to the New World where they wouldn't have to be scared ever again.
I loves my gun,
and I don't mean no money like I work at Walmart and make no money.
So enjoy yourself, or I'll come looking for you. There and veg out in front of your TV and enjoy what these fine people are giving you, which is maximum entertainment. You understand what I'm saying about? And don't you ever, ever, ever forget what it's like without TV. Because before TV, people just sat and played with themselves all night.
I loves my gun. Loves my gun.
Recorded February 9th, 2012. And welcome to this inaugural edition of Rangers A to Z. That's R4NGER5. A, as in America, the number 2, and Z, or 0, your choice. Thanks for stopping in, thanks for listening, thanks for your time. Hopefully there's some things here you can use. The basic principle of America, or of Rangers A to Z, is hopefully to give you some useful information for everyday emergencies, practical information for impractical times. This isn't really something to prepare you for the zombie apocalypse, it's more something you give to your friends and family who just want to be able to make it through a couple of days without power, or if your car gets stuck in the ditch, you can deal with that in a snowstorm or in the middle of the desert or what have you. I'm your host, Iron Angel. I've been a blacksmith for longer than I'd care to admit to. I've lived an awfully strange life. I've had a lot of experiences. I've had a lot of mentors and people that trained me in a lot of things that are very useful for every day. Needless to say, sometimes I have adventures. Some of them are worth telling. You'll hear about them here eventually over time. Sometimes the adventures just really aren't that funny, so we'll leave those parts out. It's probably worth commenting on the name to some extent. Most of the Rangers are based out of the UK. Rangers Radio, Rangers Bravo are both coming out of the UK. Rangers Oz, obviously, is coming out of Australia. For the life of me, I couldn't remember the name of the country for a while. It's always been Oz. There's also Rangers America, which is done by Xenovalent, not to be mistaken with this show. And I think there may be one more Rangers show in the works that doesn't have a name yet, but I'm not 100% on that one. So if you go to the site, r4nger5.com, you'll find over on the right-hand side a column that has a number of links. In those links, you can see things like Rangers Tube, where you get to see V out wild camping in the backcountry of England. There's every episode of Rangers Radio, which I believe is up into the 70s as of this recording. There's a few other things, and there might even be links to Storm the Wire, also done by a Rangers member, Avikadu, or however the hell you pronounce that, because I never could quite figure that out. So go there, look around, see what you can learn. If you want to stop in and ask questions, feel free. You can find us on IRC at irc.freenode.com. That's #R4NGER5 for the channel. I believe Freenode has a web chat application you can jump in with and give yourself a nickname and type #R4NGER5 into the box. Come on in and chat for a little while. You can't actually get access to the forums to read all the interesting stuff we've got until you've been in the chat room. We get to know you and know you're not a spam bot or some sort of moron that's going to, you know, take this sort of stuff and create horrible science programs at school and see what they can get themselves into trouble with. That's not what we're about. We're here to help. We're here to try and improve everybody's lives if possible. So before we get deeply into the me to this whole thing. Let's talk about the intro real quick. There's some clips in there from Malcolm X. There's a little piece from a YouTube video about the history of America that I believe was also in Michael Moore's film Bowling for Columbine, and a little commentary from Dave Windorf, lead singer of the band Monster Magnet. The music under it is something I threw together real quick. That's probably not going to be our permanent intro. The music you're hearing in the background here is something else I threw together off one of my albums. Also probably not going to be a permanent piece of the show. Hopefully it doesn't drive you too nuts. Give you something to listen to whenever I'm saying because I do it far, far too much. And with that, let's go into the actual reason we're here, okay? So as I said a little bit ago, this is Rangers A to Z. The principle behind this is to give you some useful information for everyday usages. Practical information for impractical times. In our little introduction, I mentioned things like having the power go out for a few days. So let's start there. Everybody has some place they live. Well, most everybody. Most everybody listening to this can safely be assumed to have some place they live. There's a group of people that I often refer to somewhat disparagingly as 15th generation apartment dwellers. These are people who have no real survival skills in any sort of rough environment whatsoever. When they go camping, they take a motor home with a satellite dish, and they rough it by using only a 19-inch TV set. These people, on the most part, when the power goes out, are going to be screwed. If that happens to be you, this is pretty easy to fix. The first thing we're going to do is get you some preparations done at home. Real basic things. When you go to the store, pick up a few extra cans of whatever you happen to like. Vegetables, pasta, that sort of thing. If you've got a only one can opener in the house, pick up another cheap dollar store can opener. The reason for that is it never fails. When you need it, the one good can opener you have will either disappear or, if you're really lucky, will break on you. And you don't really want to be there in the middle of the night in the dark trying to open up a can of SpaghettiOs with a screwdriver and a hammer. That's just going to end badly. Then you need to know first aid, and that's a whole other thing that you need to get into later. So, pick up an extra can opener, get some canned goods. You might also want to get some dried goods like dried pasta, for example, egg noodles, whatever happens to fit your palate. And store them away someplace that the mice and squirrels and beavers and what have you aren't going to get into. Granted, most people don't really have a lot of that sort of stuff in their house, but it's never a bad idea to keep them up in some place dry and out of the way where they don't get crushed and that sort of thing. And periodically go through and rotate your stock out. If you've had something like rice or beans or pasta sitting there for a couple of months, buy some new stuff and make up the old stuff. Home-cooked meals are always a lot better than takeout anyway. They're going to taste better, they're going to cost you a lot less, and on the whole, I think you'll enjoy them more. We'll cover cooking down the road a ways in this show, too. And give you some tips on how to make some really very inexpensive, very tasty stuff. Now that you've got dry goods put up, you're going to need water or some other means to hydrate them. I can tell you from experience that trying to eat pasta without actually cooking it really is not a lot of fun. Don't do that. If you ever want to do it just for the experience, feel free. Have something to wash it down with immediately. If you can get it down, hey, more power to you. You just gained experience points. The easiest way to store water is usually to have a closet or under the sink or something like that with, say, 10 or 12 2-liter soda bottles full of clean tap water. If your water has a metallic flavor or an odd smell or something like that, you might want to get bottled water. But if you like your water, if your water doesn't bother you, just get some soda bottles, rinse them out real good, make sure the cap seals on them good. And you also want to rotate that water on every season. After about 3 months, sometimes the water will get an odd flavor or get kind of flat or start to absorb some sort of a flavor out of the plastic. And so you're going to want to go through and replace that water periodically. If you've got, say, 10 bottles of water, that's 20 liters. It doesn't take up a huge amount of space, and you can make that work for a family of four for about 2 days without too much real difficulty. Obviously, you can't flush the toilet and take baths and showers and all that sort of thing. But this is not really looking at a long-term situation like, say, a hurricane. This is much more like it's the middle of winter, there's a snowstorm, some moron skied sideways into a power pole with his car, and now you're without power until they can get a crew out there and get the pole back upright and get the lines hooked back up and get you back online again. So, with that in mind, you've now got food and water. Well, that's a pretty good start. There's a couple more things you're going to want, though. One of them is some way to heat up that food and water. The usual method that most people use is some sort of a camp stove, like a Coleman camp stove or something like that. Now, I've had people say, well, I've got city gas, I don't have to worry about that. Well, sometimes city gas goes out, too. If the power outage is wide enough area, the controllers that control the gas system may not necessarily operate. Depending on where you happen to live and how your system happens to operate, you may or may not actually have gas. It's also possible that whatever took out your power took out your gas line. Say there was somebody with a backhoe and not a whole lot of real knowledge of what they were doing. They dug up a big old hole, and now there's a large flaming hole down the road with sparks shooting out of it. So at that point, you're going to need some sort of heating system. The usual little Coleman camp stoves are not a bad way to go. They're not terribly expensive. They run off a one-pound gas cylinder. They're a little green or other colored cylinder you can buy at camp stores or big box stores, places like Walmart and that sort of place. They're very, very nice little stoves. They cook pretty well. You can use your regular pans on them with no difficulty whatsoever. But some people don't really want to put that, you know, $40 to $100 investment in. You don't need a really big grill, but if you happen to have a gas grill, you can set that outside and use that to cook and heat up some food with. But on the whole, if you've got a little camp grill, you can also use it to camp. Why not? Go out and throw it in the back of the car and take it down to the beach. Take it with you when you go up into the woods. As long as you're careful with it, you can set it up somewhere and have a nice home-cooked dinner out in the wild and enjoy the day. Saves you a great deal of money, gives you a nice family dinner, and you can eat really pretty well for very little money that way. There are a few other kind of obtuse options here. There is an add-on made for the Coleman lanterns that allows you to set something on top of them. Putting a pan on top of them is very difficult to transfer enough heat into to actually boil water to make pasta. But just opening up a can and setting a can on top of them and warming up, say, a can of old spaghetti, canned spaghetti is just barely food. It's something you take in by mouth, and it doesn't really quantify as food, but it will keep you alive. Or say baked beans or something like that. It's nice to eat warm food. You know, when you're miserable and things aren't going terribly well, warm food really does kind of help. So you may want to look into something like those little hot plate tops that set right on top of the little gas lanterns. They also run in the same little one-pound cylinders. And there is an older form of Coleman lantern that runs on a pressurized liquid fuel. I don't like those as much myself, but if you happen to have one, see if you can find an adapter plate for it. They do vent off a pretty good amount of heat, but you also need to be conscious of the fact that they are eating your oxygen at the same time you are. So you don't really want to leave them running when you're sleeping or something like that. A lot of people have tried to cook with some pretty creative and pretty bizarre heating systems. If you don't really have a lot of experience, a hibachi in the house is just asking for trouble. Don't do that. Even if you do have a lot of experience, it's really not a good idea. I've seen people drag charcoal grills into their kitchen before when there was a big snowstorm up in the middle of nowhere. Also an incredibly horrible idea. If anything does go wrong, you're going to end up having no water to put the fire out with. You're going to have it eating your oxygen. You're just going to have all kinds of problems you don't want to have. As far as weird little impromptu things, though, there is a trick that I have seen done, and it does work pretty well. The little tea light, I can't remember exactly what they're called. You put essential oils in them diffusers. Tea light or candle diffusers can be used to warm a can of something to eat. And you can even use an empty can with some water in it and make a very small single serving amount of pasta. The big trick on the diffusers is that you need a lot of tea lights for them. You really should go buy a good-sized bag of 100 or so tea lights because you will go through them fairly quickly. They don't last a real long time. And if you put a bigger candle in them, the heat is a lot closer to the top, and it's somewhat more dangerous. I think there's a couple companies that manufacture a fairly good-sized version of the diffuser that runs on a regular 3-inch pillar candle, but I have not seen them on the market for some time, so I don't know about that any longer. Now, if you've got one of these little diffusers, don't just slap the can of tuna on top of it and let it go. You have to vent the can. Take the lid off it, because otherwise it'll build up pressure and make some sort of primitive steam bomb. It isn't going to blow your house up, it's not going to take the roof off, you're not going to have a crater or anything like that, but you are going to have tuna juice or bean juice all over the ceiling tiles, and that's really going to be a nuisance to clean up, and you just don't want to deal with that. More often than not, what happens is the can swells up. The same thing happens if you put a can in coals in a campfire. A lot of people camping will stick a can of beans in the coals in the campfire or in the open fire, which is even worse. It's actually a lot better to cook in coals than it is to cook in open fire. The can swells up, the seam ruptures, and it creates a volcano, a steam-based volcano, shooting a nice column of goo that's hot enough to leave burns. Won't catch things on fire, but it'll certainly burn skin. Make a big stinking mess. If you're out camping, it'll attract raccoons in the middle of the night. If you're in bear country, it might even attract bears or coyotes or wild dogs or roaming bands of rainbow people or who knows what. So you got to be careful about that sort of thing. Just take the top off the can with a can opener. If you're using a diffuser, make sure the can is level so it doesn't tip over and knock the whole thing over. Make sure it's sitting on a level, solid, stable surface. If you have to, set it on the floor. If you've got small kids or pets, you might want to keep them away from where you're trying to cook. A countertop works just fine more often than not. Obviously, make sure there's nothing above it that's going to catch fire. Put your hand over it. If you can't hold your hand there for a minute, it's too hot. So if you've got overhanging countertops, you want to check and make sure. But usually you're going to be okay. At that point, you've got a way to heat your food. You've got food. You're doing pretty good. Now, you need light. Light's one of those things that is getting easier and easier and cheaper as we go. LED flashlights, the generator crank-style LED lanterns, all of these things have become very inexpensive. They're very easy on batteries compared to some of the older flashlights. And there are a few other weird little tricks you can use also. A lot of people have got solar garden lanterns. When the end of summer comes in, early fall, they bring them inside, put them in the garage, and there they sit. It's actually better for them to bring them in. The batteries don't like cold very well. If you've got them out in the yard still, they might still be lighting up. Likely, they're probably not staying on anywhere near as long as you're used to seeing. You might think they're failing or covered by snow or what have you. Actually, it's the battery getting cold. Go out and fetch your LED garden lanterns. Charge them up by day, and you'll have light through a pretty good part of the night. If you've got one of the crank-type lantern systems, a lot of those have got a jack on the side of them to charge your cell phone so you can keep in touch with friends and family and let them know, yep, we're snowed in yet again. Call your cousin out in California. He'll laugh at you for being snowed in and point out to him that the ground is exactly where you left it and has been for quite some time. Now, assuming you're not actually snowed in, assuming you're in some other situation, we'll cover those down the road. But a lot of the same things apply here. You know, if you happen to be in the desert southwest and the power goes out, the solar lanterns are still going to work just fine. If you're somewhere on a tropical island and for some reason brought a solar lantern with you and still have it in functioning order, hey, you got light into the middle of the night. So now you've got food, you've got water, you've got light, you've got your house's shelter. These are really some of the main things you need to survive. The four main things are food, water, shelter, and basically safety. I swear there's one more I'm missing, and I can't remember for the life of me what that is. But in a say in a winter situation, you're going to have some sort of way of staying warm. That comes down to layers. That's just going and getting on a couple of layers of clothes, put a sweatshirt on over your t-shirt, keep moving a little bit, you know, get up periodically and move, wrap yourself up in blankets, wear gloves, wear a hat, keep the top of your head covered, and you'll stay warmer. Now, all of these same things that work in the house work to some extent in the car, you just don't need as much. If you happen to be out and about in the snow and slide off into a snowbank, you'd like to have some food with you that you can get into, but you don't necessarily want to have to ruck about in the back and dig and dig and dig and try and figure out how to set up a candle stove on the hood of your car in a driving blizzard, because that's just going to suck. So you might want to have a car kit for emergencies. Obviously, you're going to want to have some sort of light in there. That way, if you're out walking, you get gas in the middle of the night, you can shine the light and let cars that are coming toward you know that you're walking so you don't get run over. It gives you a chance to look and see around the car. If you've, you know, hit something, you can look up underneath the car and make sure you're not still sitting on top of the fire hydrant you hit. You're going to want a blanket in the car. It's not a bad idea to keep a tarp in the car. If you've got a tarp in the car and you need to get up underneath the car for some reason, you can throw the tarp down on the ground and keep from getting quite so wet and dirty. Also, if you're out in the desert, the tarp makes a very good sunshade. You can slam the door shut on the end of the tarp, spread it out, and put a couple of rocks or a spare tire or what have you on it to give you a nice shade area away from the sun. And you can stay out of the sun and keep from getting cooked. It doesn't hurt to have water in your car. In the winter, make sure that you've got 2-liter bottles that are only half full. That way, if they do freeze, and they probably will, they won't split the bottle and you won't end up with a back seat or a trunk full of water. Obviously, in the winter, the water's not going to do any real good. So you're going to have to be aware of that. You might just take them out for the winter. But during the rest of the warmer season, having 2 or 3 2-liter bottles of water in the car is not a bad idea. If the car overheats and the engine boils off some of the coolant, you can always add coolant to it that way. And you can use it to clear your windshield off with if you happen to run out of wiper fluid or something like that. If your car breaks down and you have to walk, you can take the water with you so that you're not out there wandering around thirsty and, you know, get some brilliant idea to start hallucinating and take all your clothes off and climb a tree and declare yourself Tarzan or some crazy thing. That's not necessarily a very useful thing to do. Might be a lot of fun, makes for great stories, but not necessarily a good thing. As far as car food goes, canned goods are not necessarily a bad idea, but they're a lot more difficult to utilize. You don't normally have a spoon lying around in the car unless you put your can opener and a spoon in a bag in the trunk with all your other emergency supplies. So you're going to want to have something like crackers or perhaps even potato chips or something like that, trail mix, something of that nature mixed together probably even a double Ziploc. Put one Ziploc inside of another to make sure that they don't end up tasting like exhaust or like the side of a tire or something awful like that. You really want enough food in the car for, say, one decent meal. At that point, if you get stuck, you can stay in the car and ration that food out for 24 hours if you have to. In a winter environment, you want high-energy, high-calorie food, because when you're cold, it takes a great deal more energy to stay warm. Typically, I live in Michigan. Up here, we carry a couple of candy bars, some nuts, say a small jar of salted peanuts, crackers, quite a few other little things, just what have you. Dried fruit's a nice thing to have. There's quite a few options. Go to the store, wander around. You don't necessarily want the big name brand kind of stuff. A lot of that doesn't actually keep that well. If you have something like a Whole Foods store or an Amish store in your area, go there and look at foods and ask the people that work there what will keep for, say, 4 to 6 months. That way you don't have to continually rotate the stock out, but it's still not a bad idea to do so. So, there we have it. Those few little tips can get you out of an awful lot of situations. Granted, it doesn't cover all circumstances. We'll cover other circumstances as we go. But this one sort of covers being snowed in, because this was recorded in February, and that's sort of what's on our minds. Looking at this year, for example, Europe has had a lot of problems with snow. They don't normally. I would have to assume that some of the people were bright enough to have some sort of emergency kits in their houses and their vehicles, and are doing rather comfortably. Other areas, probably, there's a lot of folks that have not, and they're having runs in the store, and they're running out of all the essentials, bread and milk and eggs and those sorts of things. Eggs. Eggs are a very good thing to store, by the way. A lot of people keep eggs in the refrigerator. Here in the States, they almost always refrigerate eggs. Oddly enough, in Europe, they leave them set out. Eggs in nature will stay quite fresh outside as long as the shells are not cracked for many days. So you don't really have to worry about it. If the power goes out, don't constantly be opening your refrigerator door. Know what you're going to get out of there before you open the door. If it's really cold, you know, if it's a snow situation, you can easily grab a cooler, take it outside, fill it up with snow, take some of the stuff out of the freezer that you want to make sure doesn't go bad, put it in with the snow, use the snow. It has to be wrapped in plastic. If it's wrapped in paper, say, for example, a freezer pizza, the snow is going to melt somewhat as it absorbs the heat out of the stuff that's in there, and it's going to cause all kinds of interesting problems. The paper will degrade, will get flavor into the things that are inside of the box. Just not a good idea. If you have to, you can also put stuff in Ziploc bags and put it in the freezer. Usually if you leave the freezer shut, though, everything in the freezer will stay frozen for about 2 days with modern refrigerators. I have seen modern refrigerators that claim they will stay completely frozen for up to 4 days. If you want to make sure about that, go out and break some icicles off the house. Say every 24 hours or so, break some icicles off the house and shove them in the freezer. If they're melting, that means that inside the freezer is warmer than freezing. That melting is absorbing heat. It's taking heat out of the atmosphere. If you shove an icicle in there and you open the door up the next day and the icicle's still sitting there exactly like you left it, everything is still frozen. Don't worry about it. It's good to go. Another trick is you can use standing water to keep things cool. If you know there's a big storm coming and you've got a couple of empty 5-gallon buckets, fill them up with water and leave them sitting in the tub. If the water goes out, you can dump a half a 5-gallon bucket into the toilet to flush it, which you can do a couple of times a day and keep the stench down and that sort of thing, keep things a lot more clean and nice and pleasant. But that standing water can also be used to keep things cold. When we're doing a lot of camping in the summer, quite often we will actually put our beverages right in a cooler full of just water, and it will maintain whatever the temperature of the water is. If we're pulling water out of a creek, quite often that water is, say, 65 degrees. On a 90-degree day, a 65-degree soda is a whole lot cooler than one that's been sitting in the back of the car in the sun all day, isn't it? Water coming straight out of the ground typically is 55 degrees. Most places in North America, and honestly, as far as I know, the world, water coming from out of the ground stays right about 55 degrees Fahrenheit. Not Celsius, because that would be really warm. There are some places water does come out of the ground at different temperatures. It's rarely colder, but sometimes you will see areas that the water comes out of the ground hotter. I've been to places like Phoenix, Arizona, where all the water comes in open-air aqueducts and then goes through a treatment process and is processed to be potable drinking water. Quite often that water comes out of the tap at nearly 70 degrees. Middle of summer, you want to go get a refreshing glass of water, and it's just not. If you happen to live in a very hot environment, you have to come up with some sort of cooling method. If you own your area, if you're not in an apartment, for example, you can dig a hole in the yard and just put it down and put, you know, a couple of 2-liter bottles down in a hole, and the cooler area down in the ground will cool off the water, and you can pull it back out and have nice cool water even without power. You can do this out camping in the desert. It's just a lot of work. A lot of areas are rather rocky, making that much more difficult. You're going to have to be a little bit creative for some of this stuff, but you know, you'll find ways. As you start to do this, you'll start realizing, hey, this is an easy way that works for me where I am. That's what you need to do. The things that work for me may not necessarily work for you, because we're different people. We could be living in different locations. On the whole, most places are relatively similar. Most people are relatively similar. As much as we fight over our differences, when you step back and look at the big picture of things, all people are relatively the same. We all have wants, we all have worries, we all have the things we like, we all have the things we dislike. They may be different things, but on the whole, we are the same creature. We are all related. And that goes anywhere in the world. I have yet to run into another human that has an extra head, that has an extra arm. I have yet to run into a human that's over 9 feet tall. I have yet to run into a human that doesn't have all the same wants and needs as I do in some way, shape, or form. And I believe as you start to look around, you'll discover that too. A very wise man... Yeah, I can talk. Some days. A very wise man once said, we cannot defeat the enemy when we are at each other's throats. And with that thought, we're going to go to a musical track. Keep that in mind. We'll come back with something else here in just a little bit.
Hi, this is Pipeline Audio for Kailua Music School. I'm going to play you a short cowboy song I wrote about my adopted hometown called Out Wickenburg Way.
We'll be right back.
That was Aaron Carey, also known as Pipeline Audio, with his track Out Wickenburg Way. His site is http://pipelineaudio.net. And the second track was Andy Samford, There Is No Beginning, from the album Love and Magic. You can find all of Andy's stuff at http://www.electricminnowmusic.com. We're also going to use Andy's track, The Peak, also from Love and Magic, as our outro song at the end of the show. Thanks, guys, for giving me permission to use your cool music. Good stuff. I like both of their work quite a bit. I have to recommend you go check out Pipeline's site for quite a bit of information about recording and all things music. He's a professional tracking engineer and mixing engineer. He's done quite a few albums you've probably actually heard. The guy knows his stuff. He's a great guy. He shares what he knows really willingly, really welcome to talk to you if you get a chance, chat with him on IRC or something like that. Just good people all around. Thanks again, guys. And it's worth noting that Andy's put up almost his entire back catalog for free if you want to go there and download it. I think he's got a donate tab, so if you like what he does, toss him a couple of bucks. He can go get a sandwich, get a soda, that kind of stuff, go back to the studio, make some more music. I know that Andy's currently taking part in RPM, Record Production Month, the RPM Challenge. It's a lot like the NaNoWriMo Writers Challenge that happens in November, except it's for music. And if you go to rpmchallenge.com, you'll find all kinds of artists there. Their site's a little hard to navigate. Quite a few artists are putting their music up on either SoundCloud or alonetone.com. I know that everything on AloneTone is free to download. Part of the terms of service of working with AloneTone is you make your stuff free to download. So there's a lot of great music there, and you're going to be hearing some from artists as I get permission to use them in future shows. Basically, it's that preparedness thing all over again. Learn how to do something, practice it, keep doing it. The more you do it, the easier it becomes. So if you want to be a musician, if you want to be a writer, take part in these challenges. They're good personal challenges to get you going. There's a big community of people to help support you and get you comfortable. A little earlier today, I recorded a Skype call with Bishop and Shiloh. Couple of friends of mine that I've known for a few years, and we had a lot of problems with I believe it's skyperecorder.exe, so we'll be looking for new software in the future. I went through and edited out all the weird little clips and pops and beeps where it would cut out, things like that. So we're going to throw the call in now, and know that whenever I reference to, you know, that was interesting, the recorder died, that's what happened. It would just suddenly stop and end the call. And we'd both kind of sit there and stare at the machine at both ends and go, huh, that was weird, that shouldn't happen. So let's go into that now. Here we are. Okay, we're here with Bishop and Shiloh. How's it going, guys?
Oh, things are going all right.
Going good.
Excellent. Let's go over getting over the fear of the unknown and getting comfortable in new experiences. How's that sound?
It's a very necessary thing to cover.
Yeah.
And very... don't know if personifies the right word by Shiloh here.
A little bit.
But,
well, you know, for a lot of people, they really haven't had a lot of new experiences and they tend to be really terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, getting out in the world and having something go wrong, having the power go out, having your car break down in the middle of a snowstorm, or, you know, a storm rolls through and takes out the, you know, a bunch of trees fall and take out the power lines, that kind of stuff. That's very scary for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to learn how to deal with that. Because when things go wrong, your response cannot be to fold, to crack, just lay there and cry.
To run away from the situation?
That doesn't do you any favors. That doesn't...
Well, case in point, last summer we had lines come down. We had a small tornado go through where we were at camping. A lot of people did kind of freak out and run out in the street, and there were live power lines laying down the street, and, you know, fortunately nobody got hurt, but the potential was there. And the people that were basically somewhat prepared went, well, okay, this is going to suck. I got food and water. We're good to go for a while.
Yep.
Yeah.
And, you know, all the people camping went out and helped clear the roads and stuff so emergency vehicles could get in and the power crews could get in, that kind of stuff. And off we went. No big deal. A friend of mine used to do something called Little House on the Prairie Night. They would, it was to kind of normalize this for the kids. Mm-hmm. They would spend the entire night, they had a wood stove, so they cooked on the wood stove and they would, light oil lamps and that kind of thing. And then when the power did go out, because they lived in an area that had a lot of storms and issues like that. And when the power did go out, they could just tell the kids, well, it's just like Little House on the Prairie Night. And it wasn't new. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't a new experience.
Suddenly this is normal.
Yeah, yeah. I guess in a way it was kind of like, it's a little bit like getting on a roller coaster. You know, you go through the experience even though you know it's going to be safe.
Right.
You know, at the end of it, you've had some sort of a thrill ride, I guess you could call it. But you know you can survive it now.
Yeah, and you want to be prepared for those things to happen. I mean...
Okay, so the recorder crashed. We'll try that again. You guys still there?
Yep.
Yeah, we're here.
Okay, where were you at? What were you saying there?
I'll say something to the effect of you wouldn't want to perform CPR without knowing CPR. You don't really want to take a test you haven't studied for. And getting over that fear of you know, unknown, new experiences. Basically studying for the test.
That's really a good analogy. Yeah, that's really kind of a pass-fail test, too.
Mm-hmm.
Some years back, the whole East Coast went out. The power grid failed. Somebody threw the wrong switch, and everything ran backwards, and a bunch of circuit breakers blew and stuff like that. And the people that were like us, that you know had put a little bit of thought into, you know, the power could go out, they were just fine. Mm-hmm. We were camping when that happened, and a friend of ours, parent, called and said, hey, are you guys okay? We're camping! You know, we've got 50 gallons of water stored, we've got food, we've got a campfire, we're out in the middle of the woods, you know, we didn't even know what happened, so...
Camping would affect my parents, because, you know, they have big trailer and everything.
That's not really camping, that's living someplace else for a while.
Yeah. They call it camping.
I was in a tent during, basically a natural disaster storm, like, we were declared a disaster area. In a tent, some of the new guys who didn't set up their tent very well actually got their tent blown down a hill. That was fun and exciting.
Yeah.
But all these people had trees knocked down and crashed their houses. We didn't know anything big had happened.
We just thought, hey, look, a storm.
Got up in the morning, wandered out, scratched yourself, looked around and said, I guess we got campfire wood for the night.
Let's start breakfast.
Yeah. And that's really what the whole purpose of this radio show is about, is to get people ready for, you know, everyday little emergencies like that.
Because they do happen.
Yeah. And it's something that, you know, really shouldn't be a big deal.
No.
But early on, stuff you guys haven't heard yet, early on I mentioned 15th-generation apartment dwellers. You know, people who basically have never been out in the world and are kind of afraid of it. You know, they don't want to go out at night because there might be monsters in the dark or some other silliness like that, you know.
And there are some people who are actually proud of the fact that they're 15th generation apartment dwellers and have no experience for things to go wrong.
Those puzzle me a little, I have to admit.
Yeah.
Having been in a lot of situations where something relatively minor went wrong, it was a nuisance, but to them it would have been a huge emergency. They'd end up having to call somebody else.
Ernest Shiloh here.
And, you know, honestly, one of the big things I noticed about preparedness is actually it saves you money.
Yeah, probably.
Quite a bit, actually.
You know, if you don't have to go out... When 9/11 hit, even though it didn't really affect us where we were, the price of gas went up...
Skyrocket!
Just horrible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, $6-$8 a gallon where it had been $1.50 or something like that. And the price on water and food jumped through the roof.
Uh-huh.
It didn't make sense to me.
It didn't make sense. It was just a knee-jerk fear reaction, and they did it because they could.
That's true.
And so yet again, the recorder crashed. Which, you know, seems to be the par for the course in this.
Yeah.
At any rate, we were kind of tailing out on basically having some preparedness saving you a great deal of money. You know, a lot of people got screwed when things went wrong. You know, whenever the storms hit and stuff, stores have a tendency to jack the price up on basic stuff like water and food and whatnot. So,
a certain relative of mine tends to keep maybe a day and a half of food in the house. It's something that I always fought with her about, because if we didn't have access to a supermarket in 3 days, we were going hungry.
And living where we do, with the potential for the snow to turn from a dusting to 2.5 feet, that doesn't seem like a good idea.
Yeah.
Seems like a terrible idea.
And we've had a few storms that have dropped some pretty good-sized trees, so, you know, being able to get to the store sometimes does take a couple of days. I mean, it's gotten better as time goes on. The emergency services systems have gotten a lot better than they have been, but, you know, it's always better to be ready than sorry. Okay, now the recorder is just screwing with me to see what it can get away with.
Find another program.
Yeah, it's gonna happen, I think. That's not gonna fly. So at any rate, I'll go through and piece all this stuff back together and have a rather entertaining little bit of audio of me fighting with the recorder trying to get this thing to work. And hopefully by the next show we'll have it put together so we don't have this issue.
Yep.
Thanks guys for putting up with all the wonderful technical problems. Shiloh and Bishop, you guys have a great day. I'll get this thing put together and get it up here soon.
All right.
Anything else?
I don't know. I'm trying to think of a tagline on the fly and it's not working.
No worries. That always happens.
It's episode one.
Well, there's that. Yeah, really there's a lot of things to get sorted out and come up with. I think so far the only tagline I've really had is practical solutions for impractical problems. So...
That works.
That works.
And yet again, the recorder cut out on us. So I want to thank the two of them again, even though we were trying to do that there at the end. Bishop and Shiloh, thanks for your time. I feel bad for anybody that happens to have a system that only has one speaker, because we did that stereo separation so you could more easily tell what we were saying in case we accidentally talked over each other. In the future, we're going to try out some different software. That was kind of the early test run, and we said, you know, we need to do something for the show. This is a conversation we've more or less had indirectly before over a campfire one night with some folks that were camping next to us. Quite a lot of times, we'll go out and camp and just try things out to see if they work or not. In a safe environment like that, you can experiment and say, well, okay, that kind of sucked. I'm glad that wasn't important. Occasionally we'll go out camping or hiking, that kind of stuff, and something will go wrong. And all those little test runs, those little roller coaster rides we took in a safe environment came in handy. Some years ago, a friend twisted an ankle quite a ways out in some really rough country. And we knew from experience that if we had to, we could build a litter and drag him, which he wasn't real keen on, so we wrap his ankle up. We happened to have a little medical kit with us because we were always concerned about a snake bite or a rock twisting an ankle or something like that, and it came in really handy. In a later episode, we're going to go through and cover things like medical kits when you're out camping and hiking and that kind of stuff, because medical information is a lot more critical and really is something you should know a lot about. So you don't actually do something wrong. Had we wrapped his ankle incorrectly, we could have cut off circulation and caused some serious structural problems, some serious injury problems to him. Fortunately, one of the people that was camping with us was also an EMT, so we had some knowledge there. We had some background that made it a lot easier for us. But on the whole, our show's winding down. We're only maybe 5-10 minutes away from the end here. As I said before, we're going to go out with Andy Samford's track, The Peak, off his album Love and Magic, from electricminnowmusic.com. Where is it .net? I'll check. Let's look real quick. It is electricminnowmusic.com. So if you want to get this last track coming up, you can go grab that there. The earlier piece, Out Wickenburg Way, is up on YouTube. So if you want to, you know, if you want to rewind the show, if you listen to it as a podcast and listen to that again, you can. Or you can get on YouTube and look for Pipeline Audio Out Wickenburg Way. I'm not sure where we're going to upload this yet. Once it's up there and we've got a firm established base, you can go there and download further episodes of the show if you want to catch some of the later stuff. You'll probably stumble across this on Rant Radio or some other location like that. I believe Rant Radio Talk and Industrial, possibly also Punk, are now all carried on Apple TV. You know, not to spread mindshare or anything like that, but it's nice for people to know that, hey, I've got one of those things. It'd be nice if I could actually listen to something interesting on there. And hopefully I've not bored you to death. I know that quite often when I get going on stuff, it's a lot like listening to stereo instructions done as a book on tape. We're going to try and get things a little more comedic in the future. Once we get all the recording issues sorted out, we'll have more pieces with us going back and forth. Once we're less tech crippled, we'll have a lot more comedic stuff, because if you leave us alone long enough and let us just waffle on about nothing, we will spit out some fairly entertaining things. And we try to behave. We try to keep it as PG-13 as possible, because we know that you might want to share this stuff with your neighbors or grandma and stuff like that. But most of us do work in construction trades or metal shops, things like that. We are rough folk. We have some rough language occasionally, and I apologize for that. It doesn't really... It's something I'm working on fixing. It's sort of a dialect by association. And this is something else to be aware of. Sometimes swearing is the quickest way of saying things. You can say, this thing is just, you know, and people know that you're saying, yeah, that's really not a good thing. That's broke. You don't have to go into intimate details, because they wouldn't understand them possibly anyway. So, but on the whole, we're going to try and keep it clean, at least PG-13, if not downright, you know, PG, G-rated in the future episodes. And in future episodes, hopefully some of the weird technical flaws won't be there anymore, and there won't be all the weird cutouts, and I won't say anywhere near as much as I have in this episode, because, boy, there have been a lot of cases where I've listened back for a real short time to check and make sure the levels were okay, or that I hadn't, you know, sneezed into the microphone or something, and I say way too much. So hopefully down the road we'll get the audio material cleaned up, we'll have better commentary, we'll have more entertaining commentary. We might tell knock-knock jokes in the middle of things just to keep you on your toes. Who knows? Let's see. For now, that about wraps up everything. In closing, I guess I'd like to say thanks very much for your time. I know that this has been nearly an hour, and before we're done, it'll be an hour. I want to thank you very much for taking the time to sit down and listen to this. And like I say, I know I'm about as exciting as listening to stereo instructions sometimes. Hopefully there's something here you can use. If you can't use it, maybe you can pass it on to somebody who can. It's one of those things that the more you know, the easier life becomes. Knowledge is something you can never lose, short of something like Alzheimer's or a head injury, that kind of thing. But hopefully you'll be able to keep it your entire life and get use out of it and get something serviceable out of it. Hopefully you can share it with the next generation coming up, because if people don't take the time to teach, everything gets forgotten. Most of the things that I have learned, I learned from crotchety old guys that had been out in the world and in a much rougher time than we live in today. Those old guys that grew up during the Depression and the Second World War are tough folks. So if you get a chance and there's something you want to learn, go ask them, hey, how do I do this? How do I make this this particular thing here do what I want it to do? How do I do whatever? I'll tell you what, if you get a chance, go to old folks' homes and ask them, you know, what was camping life in your day, Grandpa? And you'll get some great stories. Some of them might be a little rough for young ears. Most of them are very careful about that, but there's still some pretty rowdy stuff. You have to realize that our ancestors are the exact same people we are today, and even back into deep history. Humans are always humans. So with that, we're going to leave you with Andy Samford's track, The Peak. Hopefully you got something useful out of this. Hopefully you'll get something useful out of future episodes. Hopefully I haven't bored you too much that you won't come back for future episodes. Thank you again for your time, and thank you again for listening. I've been Iron Angel, working for Rangers America, A to Z. That's r4nger5.com for our website. Hop on there. You can get back issues of other Rangers projects, Rangers Oz, Rangers Radio, and Rangers Bravo. Hopefully you and yours have a good time and don't have any everyday adventures, unless you're ready for them and actually want to go through them. With that, I'll leave you. Thank you again. Take care of yourselves. Take care of your loved ones. Take care of your neighbors. Remember, we cannot defeat the enemy if we're at each other's throats. And now, Andy Samford, The Peak.